Hey everyone. Before we move on and talk about ego, I'd like to talk about some things that were brought up in the comments section of my last video about dominance. Now, some people assume that I was saying that dominance is bad or making a moral judgment against dominance. I wasn't. There's nothing good or bad about nature. Nature doesn't have morals. Nature just is. Our instincts are. Hypergamy is an evil, dominance is an evil. However, these can be beneficial or harmful to our goals. And the reason why I call this series The Enemies of Man is because if our goal is to defeat gynocentrism and are no longer being made to serve women and sacrifice themselves for women, I assume that's kind of why we're here. We live in this bullshit gynocentric society and we want to do something about it. And the dominance instinct gets in the way of that because it causes men to fight among themselves. And when we fight among ourselves, it creates a simple divide and conquer strategy for the gynocrats. All you have to do is just pit this group of men against this group of men and then control the survivors. Done deal. You know, we build things, we get pitted against each other, and then who benefits? Well, the women, or the people who ally themselves with the women. However, this doesn't mean that these instincts are bad. It just means that they can be manipulated by people who want to control and dominate men. And this is what people do. This is the dark side of dominance. But dominance also has a bright side. It has a useful function. This is why it's an instinct. It has facilitated the survival and the adaption and the strength of humanity in the past. So the question isn't how do we get rid of dominance, it's how do we redirect dominance. So someone brought up how dominance can actually form civilizations. When men come together, they work together for a common goal, and they dominate their environment. They quell, you know, the savages, and they establish order. And that's true. This is a sign of dominance. Some people make the point that men built civilization for women. Now, I don't wholly agree with that, but I understand where they're coming from. Men don't necessarily need the institutions of civilization to thrive. However, women do. And because women are a resource for men, in order to keep women safe from other men, as per the dominance instinct, humans built civilizations to house and protect their women. They didn't do it necessarily because women demanded it. Women were like, I'm not giving you the pussy unless you build civilization. I mean, back then, women didn't have a say in the matter. However, men did build civilization in order to protect women, both from the elements in nature and from other men, especially other men. Hence the dominance instinct. This is where it all comes together. Another distinction that should be made regarding dominance is how it relates to what some would call a class struggle. Now, there is a tendency for those who attain some sort of success, money or power or whatever, that as soon as they achieve success, they slam the door shut and kick the ladder down to keep other people from achieving success as well. Because if more people achieve success, that creates competition for them and their children. And they want to achieve success even if they know they're not the best. You see this all the time. When somebody gets to the top, they have to be worried about someone else overthrowing them. The fear of being usurped is very much an aspect of the dominance instinct. The cure for that is really just economic and social mobility. And I made a video on that very topic, more the economic part. As long as people can become rich regardless of whatever station they're born into, it's okay. It's when society gets locked into these classes or castes. Where you're born determines where you end up and you really have no say, where you have the nobles and the peasants. That's when bullshit happens, and that's when revolutions happen. Now, in an ideal society, there would be institutions that would protect men from female hypergamy, which in the past included things like fidelity and chastity laws. But there would also be economic and social mobility in order to facilitate male dominance. Now, another way that the male dominance instinct can be positively turned into a productive outlet is in a business. Men can work together if they have a common goal. It all depends on the incentives. Where you have like an all-male company, where all the employees are male and they're all working together and it's a well-oiled machine, you invariably have some sort of system in that company where the men know exactly what is expected of them and how they can rise in the ranks and be promoted. If there's a clear structure of this is what I have to do to be promoted, then there's no politics or there's very little politics, you're going to have a calm, peaceful, productive business. where you have a lot of politics, where everybody has to jockey for position and stab each other in the back, you're going to have a lot of bullshit. So it really depends on the structure of the business, whether it's automatic based on seniority and performance, or whether it involves like going to a board and competing for certain positions and who you know. These all play a role in whether or not a business can successfully turn the dominance instinct into a productive outlet, or whether it will turn in on itself and destroy the company. There's this saying I've heard, and I'm going to butcher it, but it basically goes like this. A talent hires A talent. B talent hires C talent. And what that means is, when you have someone who knows what they're doing, they're at the top of their game and they know it, they're not afraid to hire and surround themselves with equally talented people, because they're not threatened by them. They know they're awesome, so they surround themselves with awesome people and they create this hub of awesomeness. However, if you're a B person, if you know you're not awesome and you have flaws, you're going to be worried about hiring people who are good, because they might outshine you and take your position. So you're going to hire people who are worse than you. You're going to hire C people. And that's actually bad for the company. But I see this all the time. I've worked for companies where I've been hired and my manager was threatened by my work ethic and performance, and they tried to sabotage me because they didn't want me taking their job. It's bullshit. I don't know how they even got that job in the first place. And it's always happened when the manager was a man. I've had bosses that were women and they were never like that, because they were usually a quota hire. So they never worried about me taking their job because they knew their job was safe because they were a woman. But when it was a man and they were worried, oh man, this guy's really talented. This guy has a really good work ethic. He's really shining. Oh, he's going to take my job. I better sabotage him. But this is the dominance instinct. People are threatened by other men, and so they have to assert themselves, or they have to sabotage them. This is where the office politics comes in. Now, it can work. It depends on how the company is structured. It depends on the incentives they create and how they structure things like performance reviews, promotions, and so forth. But let me read. This is going to be kind of funny. I'm going to read a section from the Pedigree website, you know, the people who make dog food. But they have a web resource which talks about the dominance instinct in dogs. And I think it would be really educational to go over this. So I'm going to talk about this. This is strictly about dogs. But see if you notice the parallels in human behavior. It says, quote, "Dogs are social animals who have a pack instinct that is a natural need to be with other dogs. In the wild, they need to cooperate with one another in order to survive. They display all of the basic behaviors, including hunting and rearing of young. In this pack environment, however, because the pack is such a tight structure, it is essential that all dogs within the same group get along well to avoid disruption and conflict. By living according to a strict pecking order, dogs are able to minimize tension and competition. This reduces the risk of physical confrontation, which could result in injury for pack members. Far from leading to aggression, the presence of a top dog within a pack should reduce aggression and make the pack more stable. In the wild, a pack does not establish a natural hierarchy immediately. For the chain of command to be established within the pack, individual dogs need to be familiar with one another, and some need to be prepared to show subordinate or submissive behavioral responses. Other dogs will want to establish their rank in the group and will start a series of confrontations. These confrontations will take place until each dog has been defeated into submission and one dog is left as the dominant animal. Within a pack, these confrontations can take place regularly and over time as hierarchy is established. The dogs who have won more competitive encounters are given a higher rank than those who have failed to win. Because it is important to avoid injury during these competitions, the subordinate dog in an encounter will give clear signals to the other animal that confrontation is unnecessary. In this way, the submissive dog is effectively giving his dominance away without making the other dog prove his point with physical violence. Some studies show that dogs are born dominant and that their behavior is governed by hereditary traits. Such a belief leads to dogs being labeled as dominant at an early age, which in turn relates dominance to aggression in dogs. This misconception of dominance has led to many dogs being labeled as potentially dangerous. Some dogs may be less inhibited in their behavior than others and therefore may be less likely to diffuse a situation with submissive signaling. For these dogs, the question of their dominance can only be settled by an encounter with another individual. If the other animal is inhibited in terms of its behavior, then the less inhibited dog is more likely to assume his dominance. But this does not guarantee that he will be dominant in all relationships, or that he will always be superior to that partner. At the time, the best dog won, but that doesn't mean the other dog won't test him again and win. The dog that wins the majority of encounters with a range of individuals is given the job of leading the pack. This is the highest accolade, but as with any high-flying job, the position brings with it responsibility as well as privilege. The top dog maintains his position of authority through respectful communication with his fellow pack members, and bullying tactics are unwelcome and unnecessary. Many dogs within the pack are not interested in being a leader and are happy to be lower-ranking members of the workforce. These dogs often find responsibility difficult to handle and feel pressured by privilege. While the top job is filled by a stable and secure boss, everything is fine, but any signs of instability in the higher ranks can lead to problems. This insecurity can become a source of anxiety to those further down the ranks, and the pack can be thrown into disarray. A pack without a strong leader is a pack under threat. If the leader fails to demonstrate his position consistently, trouble can often break out in the lower ranks. These lower-ranking dogs will jostle for the top position. End quote, and that's all I'm going to read. So, a natural hierarchy needs to be established within men, whether it's a business or a government or whatever. If there's a strong leader and people trust in their authority and their competence, people will naturally follow. However, there will still be people jockeying for position, and as long as there's a non-violent way to achieve position based on merit, it shouldn't come to violence. So, the important thing is, in order to curb the dominance instinct and to keep it non-violent, you have to have some sort of mobility. Because everything's really about resources. The dominance instinct is about acquiring resources for reproduction. So if resources are available, if you work hard enough, if nobody is stuck in the lower classes just because they were born there, then there's really not that much of a problem. However, if men feel there's no hope, that no matter how hard they work, they're always going to be poor, they're never going to have enough, and all the women are going to, you know, the upper class, they're going to get really mad and they're going to get really violent because they don't have a choice. But notice that even in pack animals, they talk about responsibility, the responsibility of being on the top. You know, here we have a dog food website, which understands the need to have responsibility and leadership go hand in hand better than our own government, better than our legal system. But again, there's no voting in dogs. The dogs simply compete with one another and establish a natural hierarchy. So anyway, just to close all this out, when I talk about dominance, I'm not making a moral judgment whether it's good or bad. I'm saying it gets in the way of men achieving their goals. If their goal is to defeat gynocentrism, dominance absolutely gets in the way. The whole reason women were given the right to vote was because a small group of men wanted power, and they knew that giving women the right to vote would lead to them getting that power. So they betrayed their fellow man in order to give women the right to vote so that they could get power for themselves. And men are always going to do stuff like that. Because if it's in their benefit to do so, if screwing over other men benefits them, they're going to do it without losing any sleep. Because men don't have that sort of in-group bias. Some people brought this up in the comments section. Women can also view other women as competition, but only when they're looking for a mate, which is a very small window. I mean, you think like, you know, early 20s to maybe early 30s, women are jockeying for a suitable mate. However, once they acquire their man who's going to provide for them for the rest of their life, they don't need to compete with other women. Now, there is the odd, you know, woman trying to steal her man issue, but that's very uncommon. For the most part, if a man is taken, like if he's married or something like that, other women leave him alone. Thus, women don't feel threatened by other women. They have the guy, and then in cases where the man would cheat or share his resources with multiple women, they pass laws which punish the man for doing so. I mean, think of all the laws. The laws are there to make sure men quote-unquote behave. So there's no reason for women to look at other women as competition unless they're both single and trying to acquire, you know, the same group of men, because maybe one of them will get the good man, one of them won't be able to. Then you have a win-lose situation. But that's a very small window. Maybe 10 years? So you have a 10-year window where women look at each other as competition, and then the rest of their life, they don't. They can form bonds or whatever. They don't give a shit because they're not competing with each other anymore. They've got their man. They've got their meal ticket. They're good. But men have to constantly acquire resources. It's not like, oh, I'm going to acquire resources. Oh, I'm done. I've acquired all the resources I'll ever need. That very rarely happens unless you win the lottery or something. For the most part, you have to constantly go to work. You have to constantly up your skills. You have to worry about being laid off. You have to buy an insurance policy in case you get disabled. There's all these things you have to do because if the resources ever stop flowing, you're going to get thrown out on your ass, you're going to lose all your shit, you're going to lose your kids. So because men have to constantly fight for resources, they are constantly looking to other men as competition because those men are fighting for the same resources. And this is why you have a constant struggle with men establishing dominance against each other where you don't have that with women. Because women can just acquire their man while they're young, and then they've locked him down, and then they're taken care of for life. It's a done deal. Now, maybe if society changed, if men weren't locked down, if there was no marriage, if men could leave and take their resources with them, and the woman didn't have a guaranteed meal ticket for life, instincts react to environment. If we change the environment, the instincts will be affected. The reason why gynocentrism is absolutely out of control is because of the environment that we've built in Western civilization. If we change that civilization, we can change how the instincts react. So, I mean, that's probably worth its own video, but I think I've rambled on enough. So that's all I'm going to say about this. I appreciate all the feedback from my last video. Coming up next, we're going to talk about ego. Thank you for watching, and I'll see you next time.